Hi, this is Manton Reese.
And this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Core Intuition, Flappy Bird on steroids.
Manton, put down the phone. Step away from the iPhone.
Tap, 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 tap. Flap, 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 flap. Crash.
Flappy Bird. As most of our listeners probably know, Flappy Bird is the worldwide sensation from a Vietnamese developer, Dong Nguyen, is how I usually pronounce that. I don't know if that's correct, though. There was a kid in school when I was a kid. He spelled his name the same way, but he just pronounced it Win, like it was.
Huh.
So who knows? Any like naive American who had never been exposed to it be like Nguyen or something,
right?
Yeah. And I don't know. Maybe that's the correct one. Maybe we're just all desperately trying not to sound like we are choking it out. But anyway, Flappy Bird developer over the weekend famously announced that he was going to pull the game. And I had only just heard about Flappy Bird from, of course, it has this built-in tweeting feature. And a lot of people had shared their scores, and I was like, oh, right, just what I need is another game. I don't need another game. So I didn't even look at it. I didn't install it. Meanwhile, all these people are like, I can't believe I'm playing this game. It's the worst. It's the worst game ever, and I love it. Yep. And so the long story short is I did not end up downloading it until – you know, I was there on the day, on my computer, on the day that this guy says he's going to pull the app. Suddenly, it became very interesting to me.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, grab it. I've got to go grab that. Yeah. So I downloaded it. I wanted to have it as an artifact. And
exactly.
I actually, even after I downloaded it, I'm like so good with this stuff that I downloaded it and didn't even run it once. So when you mentioned earlier today that you wanted to talk about it on the show, I thought, okay, well, I better go play it. And I'm happy to say, unlike many, many people in this world, I was able to play it for about 1 minute and then put it down.
Nice. You were not. We'll see. That was this morning, right?
This morning.
We'll see if tonight you. So my story is, my daughter showed it to me like last week, right as it, I think it was about to hit, you know, teenagers find out about this stuff right as it's spreading across the world. And she showed it to me. She's like, this is the hardest, stupidest game ever. And of course, she's addicted to it, playing it all the time. And so I looked at him like, oh, that looks easy. Let me try to beat your high score. And of course, I got a score of zero. You know,
I got a zero. Like,
this is harder than I thought. Yeah. Anyway, so I said, I'm not going to download this. I refuse to be addicted to games. I have real work to do. But same thing as you said, Saturday or whatever, when it was announced that he was going to pull it, I was like, well, I got to get this. And I've played it a lot, actually. Since. My high score is 44 now. I feel like I'm getting good at it. I'm getting good at this game. But
To what end, Manton?
I know, exactly. But the fascinating thing to me about it is, okay, he wrote it in a couple, we throw around a lot of times like, oh, we could build that game in an hour, a couple days. He said he built it in a couple days.
It only took a couple days.
So, I mean, it's silly, it's ridiculous, but it's extremely hard. And the difficulty level doesn't ramp up. It starts impossibly hard and then stays that way until you die. Which is interesting in itself, but even more fascinating to me is what happened around it. Like if you looked at the App Store reviews, and I hope someone will archive these and put these up now that they're all not online anymore, it just became this hilarious joke. Like this game is stupid, extremely addicting, ridiculously hard. And the people would post silly reviews like, you know, this ruined my life. My girlfriend broke up with me. I had to move out of the country. Just silly over the top stuff. And so it became something bigger than it really was, which I don't know, just crazy. The App Store is just a crazy place. And I posted to my blog last week about one of the fixes I think the App Store is really, you got to get rid of the top 200. That's the only way to like encourage quality apps and really just double down on curating and featuring good apps. But at the same time, like, this app may never have happened if it wasn't for the, you know, the top 10. So it's just a wacky store.
It's a phenomenon. And it's interesting that you mentioned those reviews, because I'm guessing, you know, the developer announced the end of the app very just like sort of tersely and didn't give much reason. And then I think today, or maybe it was yesterday, Forbes got an exclusive interview with the developer, and mm-hmm. actually have a reporter meet up with him in person in Hanoi. And he says the reason he pulled the app is because it was an addictive product, his words. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, the implication being that he feels responsible for probably some of these reviews you were talking about, like, my girlfriend broke up with me, and right. and I'm, you know, it's a fascinating game because it's so simple. It's like it's like he's got this like rarefied piece of like game addiction crack, you know, it almost makes you think, like, if it were any more complicated, that it would be less addicting. And
I think that's true. Yeah. And the App Store seems to reward simplicity often. You know, I mean, this is not the first stupid, simple game that you could program in 2 days that has got to the top of the charts. But that interview, I haven't read the whole thing yet, but that is interesting, because a few days ago it sounded like he just couldn't take the pressure. He couldn't just it was overwhelming, like press people bombarding him for interviews. Obviously, you know, tens, hundreds of thousands of these crazy reviews in the App Store, and most of them are jokes. A lot of them are jokes, but, you know, some of them people are actually addicted and really annoyed. But it sounded like it was just so overwhelming, he just kind of had to pull the plug on the whole thing.
Yeah. You know, I want to mention one other thing. Just like kind of, it's fun to kind of joke about Flappy Bird and like, oh, it's a stupid game, it's simple, all this stuff, but it sort of reminds me of a post I found via our friend Marco Arment. It's Bijan Sabe. He's a VC investor, and he wrote a post called "The Blah 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 on Steroids," and it's sort of a dismissal of this product planning idea where it starts out saying, "I'm going to make such and such, but on steroids," right? Mm-hmm. So like, I'm going to go make Flappy Bird on steroids, and it won't be successful. And he points out he has these great examples. He says, like, you know, the Microsoft Surface is the iPad on steroids, and you know, it's hard to argue with that, and it's good food for thought, especially as I'm, like, you know, working on a complex app like Mars Edit, thinking like, oh, I got to add all these new features, I got to make this more functional. And then the Flappy Bird guy, until he declined it, was making allegedly $50,000 a day. He proved that, you know, obviously this is the major, major example of the hit mentality, but he proved that you can make a whole lot of money off of just ads mm-hmm. with the least steroid-induced app ever. Practically.
Yeah, and I think there is something to, if you can simplify your app, it is easier to sell the app.
Yes, yeah.
You know, and I struggle with that because I want to add every feature, and I want to make it feature-rich and complex, and, you know, I want it to have depth to it. But you need to do that in a way that is still so obvious on the surface, the one thing it's good at.
Yep.
And then people can discover the depth later. But yeah, you're right. I think Flappy Bird is, I mean, credit to him too, I think, for, I mean, we can joke about it, but I mean, yeah, he was super successful with it. And like you said, if he had changed one little thing differently, it wouldn't have worked. And the way this blew up that annoys me a little bit is I think a lot of developers were a little too judgmental or quick to dismiss or say he's not not a real developer, or he doesn't right. deserve, you know, like a lot of people. And there was one post even that went in saying how speculated that he used bots to, you know, rate the app or download it. And I don't, that's not cool to me. I mean, there's no proof or that he did any weird scams or anything like that. And everything, if you take you know, at his word, everything he said, it's the exact opposite of that. And so, you know, these weird flukes happen sometimes, and we shouldn't, you know, pile on him and say, you know, he doesn't deserve it, or, you know, or whatever.
And the fact that you know, you, Manton, an intelligent, well, relatively intelligent person.
Oh, thank you.
The fact that you could pick this game up and find it compelling enough to keep playing is evidence, you know, against the people who dismiss it as somehow rigged, or, you know, that this isn't an authentic success. And maybe this guy just got lucky. Maybe he is sort of a genius about knowing that the simplicity really works.
Probably a little bit of all of that. He definitely got lucky. I mean, the app's been out for 6 months and it didn't.
Oh, really?
Go anywhere.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the weird thing, is it did. It reached some point where it took off.
Yeah.
But I think it's a combination of things. The app was perfect for what it was trying to do. He got lucky, got some downloads. It spread, you know, the way these kind of things spread. And it also hit on this just kind of crazy, this is ridiculously hard and stupid, and that just turned it into a thing, turned it into something bigger than it would have been otherwise.
So you know, Manton, that I have been playing another game. So I am, as I said, admirably capable of putting down the iPhone when Flappy Bird is at stake. And this is possibly related to the fact that I can't seem to get the bird through one gap. But granted, as I said, I only played it like a minute or so. But
right.
It's very, very hard to do. And I'm impressed that you've gotten through 40. That alone tells me how much you've played.
Oh, yeah. I haven't tracked how many. I'm glad the game doesn't track how many hours you've.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't played it that much, but probably more than I care to admit. But yes, so you picked up and you just blogged about this new game, Threes.
Yes.
Which I wasn't planning on getting. I'd heard a little bit about it, but I did pick it up yesterday so that I could know what you're talking about. And it turns out this game is very good. And I think it's interesting because it's almost the opposite of Flappy Bird. They're both number one in their respective categories. You know, Flappy Bird was the number one free app. Threes is up at the number one paid app.
Oh, really? Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. It was last night. And of course, wildly different, you know, download numbers, right? I mean, because of the free app, you know, I think when I looked on GameCenter, it was like 30 million people were playing Flappy Bird.
Oh, my God. Like that. 30 million addicts, you mean? Right. 30 million people degraded in their life by this sinister developer.
But for a paid app, the Threes is $2. It still has, you know, millions of downloads or whatever, and it's hugely, I don't know about millions. Yeah. It's got however many downloads it takes to get to number one in the App Store for a couple of days.
Right.
And it is the opposite. It's not a three-day hack. It's, you know, very well crafted.
It has, you know, gameplay.
They spent a long time on it.
The gameplay is, it's one of these games where it's like a simple set of rules that nonetheless have implications that make it hard to understand how you actually play it best. Like, you can, there's some basic things, like, you know, for folks who haven't seen it yet, the basic idea is you have these tiles on a board that need to be combined, kind of like those like little it's kind of like those little puzzle tile, like, you know, 3x3 games where you rearrange all the numbers, but in this case you want to get the numbers matching numbers to combine with each other, and then there's some other problems on top of that. But it's so simple to learn and then very difficult to master, I think. And that's a I blogged about this, and that was one of my keys, was like, it's easy to learn. And so you pointed out to me before we recorded that, you know, in a lot of ways, Flappy Bird is sort of against the four things I said are compelling about Threes. I said Threes is easy to learn. It's easy to quote unquote do well, meaning that you can make really quick progress at the beginning. And then it's enticing because it's really hard to do really well. And then I pointed out the draw of being able to compare your scores with other people on with your friends and with strangers on Game Center, and I think that's something Flappy Bird really benefits from too. But you know, you pointed out that Flappy Bird doesn't really have the "it's easy to do well" thing. It's just abusive in a sense. Like it's just it's just hard. It just lets you fail immediately. Again and again. And it doesn't even say, like, hint, try to do better.
Yeah. And it would not, if it was easy to start, like, if you could play it the first time and get, like, 10 points, it would not be the same.
No.
And the addicting part is the fact that you can die immediately and then play again immediately. The games are short, especially if you're no good. You could play, you know, threes, it takes a while to play one game.
Yes, it does.
Like, it takes several minutes at least.
And it takes several hours to play several games, although I wouldn't know.
Right. With Flappy Bird, you could play 100 games in, you know, that same time or whatever. So the addicting part, I think, that's where Flappy Bird is like, maybe they're both addicting as far as games go, but the Flappy Bird level, because you can quickly replay it, that's where it gets to like the crazy addiction. And also, someone else pointed out, it looks easy. And so you think you're good at it. Even though you're not. But threes is, I really like it. There's also one difference, I think, is the element of chance, where I mean, I don't want to compare and contrast these games totally, but because I'm playing both of them and I very rarely play games, I find it kind of interesting. There's some luck involved in threes where, you know, you don't know exactly the starting board. You don't know exactly what things you're going to get. And, you know, every game progresses a little bit differently. Something like Flappy Bird is purely, can you figure out how to make this game work? It's always going to be the same. And if you get good at it, you might mess up, but you're good at it. You know, there's not that same element of randomness.
Isn't there some randomness in like where the pipes in Flappy Bird are and like?
Yeah, but I find that doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
it matters maybe to be like, you might get luck if you're not good at the game. You might get lucky and get some pipes in a row and get like 5 or 10 points or even 15 or 20. But like to get high scores that people have, I don't think the randomness makes a difference.
Well, so here's the thing. I think it's probably more or less the same about threes. And in threes, the trick is just figuring out, like I kind of feel like with threes, the numbers and the combinations of new tiles you receive to somebody who's sort of figured out the game is maybe about as easy as, oh, the pipe just happens to be at a different height right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe I'm just not far enough in the game.
And but that's the for somebody like me who's like a puzzle solver, that's the draw, is like, why can't I figure out, you know, the right move to make every time?
Well, and you can get, maybe the better way to say it is you can get lucky.
Yeah,
like because the first I played it a couple times and then I got worse, you know what I mean? Like the first couple games I think I scored 3,000 or something. And I was like, oh, I like this game. And then all of a sudden, the next game was like, not, you know, 500 or 1,000. You know, it was way less than that. And so I felt like I figured it out, and then I got worse, and now I'm getting better again. But it's possible to get lucky and to like swipe around and things happen. Of course, you're never going to get a high score that way, but you can kind of have the appearance of doing well in it.
That's what I think I was alluding to with the, like, it's easy to do well at the beginning, because you just start swiping around. My son, 5 years old, he saw me playing it and he wanted to play it. And I said, all right, whatever. And he did not get a very high score, but he made things happen and they were combining and he was making progress. He got a score. Whereas if, like, you know, he tried to play Flappy Bird, which I will not allow, like, then I bet he would, I don't know, he might get good at it, but I bet he would fail a lot at the beginning, at least. Anyway, I guess maybe we shouldn't go on all day talking about threes and Flappy Bird, because we really need to get back to playing them. So,
I hope to, I'm going to play threes a little more, but I hope to... hope to take away something from these, just in terms of just, I don't know. It reinforces kind of the two app stores to me. You know, you got this one game that took a year to build, and it's got these nice sound effects and quality graphics and real depth to it. And then you have another game that did not take that long, but is even a bigger hit. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of underscores how weird the app store is. And maybe someday it won't be so weird, but in the meantime, we kind of have to roll with the way it's set up if we want to be successful.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's fascinating, and it is. I still think Threes is very simple, but it does have depth to it that's like, oh, okay, they thought of this. And I was particularly impressed with the way that they do the intro tutorial, where it's one of those things where they guide you through live action of playing the game. Yep. And that's like really – any of us who make software, I think – you know, as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, my God, how can I do something more like this, like the first time you set up your blog in Mars Edit?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to be better at doing that. In Sunlit, it was the kind of the first time I've tried to do that. And it's like you first launch it, you sign in, and then it'll do simple things like put a little arrow up to the, you know, the plus button where you get started. And, you know – when you add something, there's a little bit of text pain to like retitle the story. I've tried to do a couple of those things, but I feel like you can really master that sort of art of the intro.
Yeah.
You know, I'm using the app. I'm learning how it works, but I'm also actually doing something. And a few apps recently have done that really well. I think Facebook Paper does that pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you can also go overboard. I used a web app the other day that I'm forgetting what it was now, but it had way too much help text on the screen and I couldn't get rid of it. You know, it kept wanting to point out things to me with these little popovers. And I knew how to use the app already, so it was because it was obvious. There wasn't that much to the app. And it kept pointing things and putting these little, you know, little popovers saying, okay, click here if you understand how this section works. And you can go too far and create something that's frustrating to start using.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think there's some good stuff to learn from these games. And it's funny, you know, they are addictive. And I have been doing pretty well not playing Threes, you know, during my work day when I'm trying to get stuff done. But I actually saw on Twitter, Brent Simmons, our friend, made the tweet that he had to actually delete it from his app, from his phone. It's like he just had to draw the line. It's like it's like flushing the stash down the toilet, right?
Yeah, the only way to be safe. Don't delete Flappy Bird. You can't get it back.
I know. Wow. That's like a philosophical, you know, meditation point there. All right, folks. Well, once again, we are delighted to be sponsored by Crashlytics. Crashlytics makes an iOS and Android, but most folks on this show, iOS is the thing. It's an iOS crash reporting framework. You download it, you get this great in-app guidance as it shows you exactly how to embed it in your Xcode project, build the project with Crashlytics enabled, upload that to the App Store, and the next time folks have crashes with your app, you will start getting immediate feedback through the Crashlytics website, and you can see exactly how your app crashed. Shows you a beautiful like stack crawl analysis of it. You can keep track of whether you're getting the same crashes again and again. When you do fix a crash, you can close it on Crashlytics so that if any reports come in the future, you don't even get bothered by them. It's a really great, really polished solution for keeping yourself accountable for crashes, getting a greater insight into your app's actual behavior out there in the field, because, you know, so many of us developers, we use our own apps in particular ways on our own hardware, with our own style, with our own habits. We sort of learn subconsciously how not to crash our apps. And a solution like Crashlytics is just what we need to let us know how other people are using our apps, how it's crashing, and how we can fix it.
Yeah, I wanted to share a quick story. You know, as listeners know, I'm working on this new app, Sunlit, with my friend Jonathan Hayes. And last week, he told me about sort of a great customer experience thing he had with Crashlytics, where he just tweeted something kind of randomly about the build server that he was working on. And they, within minutes, I think, replied like, how can we help you? You know, where do I email you to follow up on this so we can make this better? And this wasn't, he wasn't like at replying Crashlytics asking for help. It was just, they were proactive about reaching out and saying, you know,
yeah,
let's work on this. And I found that really just great, because it's easy to think, well, they were acquired by Twitter, you know, a year ago, maybe they're distracted and not thinking about Crashlytics anymore, but that's not the case at all. And having like really great, you know, customer support interactions like that, it's just really nice. Nice to know you can count on those guys.
Yeah, you know, and you might think it's because, you know, it's the famous Manton Reese and his business partner, but they are all over Twitter. They're on top of it. As we're recording, I went and looked, and Crashlytics has responded 1 minute ago to somebody who tweeted 7 minutes ago, and they're just always on top of it. And I actually saw Wayne from Crashlytics do a talk here in Boston where he explained the company philosophy a little bit. And it's very much like that. It's very much like delight customers at every turn. And I think you'll feel nice. The same way. I think you'll see that that's evident if you download and give Crashlytics a try. It is really focused on trying to delight developers. And that's, you know, should be of interest to a lot of you out there. So go to www.crashlytics.com, download the completely free framework, embed it in your app, and get a taste for how great Crashlytics is. Thanks so much for sponsoring the show. So Manton, you know, we were just talking about Flappy Bird and Threes and what we can learn from them. And a lot of what I'm trying to learn from them is stuff that I'm going to be adapting and, you know, applying to Mac software. But, you know, I'm still interested in iOS, and I'm still planning to ship significant software. And, you know, this is something we've sort of chatted about off of the air from time to time, but I have become convinced that almost anybody with a Mac app should have some form of an iOS app to support that Mac app. And this sort of came up with you and I talking because, you know, you have your Mac video management app called ClipStart, and I've been sort of trying to convince you to make an iOS app for it, which is funny, you know, me trying to convince anybody to make an iOS version of their app. Yeah. But, you know, one of my hesitations about making iOS versions of my apps has always been the question of whether the investment of time will pay off, because it's not so clear to me how whether you can make significant money selling software the traditional quote unquote way. You know, I'm not going to put ads in it and have 500 million people download it like Flappy Bird. So, but I've sort of like convinced myself, and I'm trying to convince you that if you do it right, even like a very simplified version of an app or just an auxiliary app that, you know, somehow integrates with your Mac app, I think it sort of has like this marketing ability for your Mac app. So yeah, maybe I can't sell, or let's talk about you instead. Let's not talk about Mars Edit. Maybe you can't sell ClipStart for iOS for $40, but maybe you can sell it for $10, or maybe you can, I don't know, maybe you can give something away for free. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, in short, we have to consider the fact or the possibility that making software available on iOS could lead to selling $40 Mac software.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. And for me with ClipStart, I always wanted to do an iOS version, but I think I got hung up on this idea that the iOS version had to have like feature parity with the Mac version. Like it had to sync, it had to have tagging, it had to have the same organization, it had to be able to upload to Flickr and Vimeo. And I felt like, you know, almost like you had a checklist, like, well, the iOS version has to do this stuff too, or it's not ClipStart for iOS. And I think that's not true. I can't ship that right now. I don't have the time to build that kind of app. But I maybe do have the time to build something that's called ClipStart for iOS that shares some of the same principles, but that is very much simplified. And like you said, maybe it's cheap, maybe it's even free, just as a bonus for my Mac users, and also as, like you said, marketing. People might discover it on iOS. It's useful even though it's simple on iOS, and then realize that there's this Mac counterpart that has all, you know, all these other features, and that maybe is a really good fit for their workflow.
Yeah, you know, I've just had my stroke of insight. The brilliant path to my riches and fame has been illuminated for me.
All right.
And I think I can throw this together in a few days.
Flappy edit.
Flappy blog. It's going to be big.
But does it sync? Does it have markdown support?
It gives you 30 seconds to type before auto-publishing to your blog. Hey, this is...
Oh, my God. That's like Snapchat meets... I mean,
I'm totally joking right now, and I'm simultaneously afraid that somebody's going to run with this idea and make millions of dollars.
Oh, my gosh. That's crazy.
Flappy blog.
Flappy blog. You need cute sound effects to sell that.
Yeah. It'll be like... That seems like an original song, right?
And you could have, you know, like, there's a lot of aspects to that. You could have like a, you know, when you type into Twitter, you know, it counts down from 140. This would be kind of a second timer in the corner as you're typing away before it posts.
Yeah, and it doesn't even give you the chance to like finish a word. Like if you are typing halfway through a word, it goes.
Posts. So can you cancel it, or is it like once you start typing,
you have to quit the app? Yeah, you have to publish.
This would encourage some really interesting. Well, maybe this is what a lot of people say. They don't have time to blog. You know, they have all these drafts of blog posts they want to write. But
it's
worried about publishing. This forces them to blog.
It's getting real, Manton. It's going to happen. I think maybe not 30 seconds. How about 1 minute? 1 minute, mm-hmm. And whatever you type. This is what happens. You can't do this on iOS. You can't have an app automatically quit. But you open the app.
Just crash it.
You open the app and it starts the timer. That's it. Mm-hmm. And then everything
just
you type.
Blank screen. Yep, yeah.
And then it publishes it. And then you can't blog again until you quit and start the app over.
Oh, here's how you really make the money. This is the Candy Crush mentality. You can't blog again for 5 minutes unless $2. And then you can speed up the clock. That's how those crazy in-app purchases are making so much money, right? It's like they introduce a gameplay mechanic that is extremely frustrating, but you can pay to make it easy or to get by it. Please don't do that, but there's money there probably.
Yeah, well, the problem is I'd make so much money that I probably would like – not really even want to like bother with things like podcasts and making software. So I got to stay away from that kind of money. That kind of money is devastating.
Yeah, this is funny. I mean, maybe there is something to trying to encourage people to blog more. You know, use Marzetta and you're going to blog more. Maybe the countdown is silly.
I think the whole thing is silly, but there's a non-0% chance that I am going to leave this podcast and start working on it immediately.
Oh, wow. Well, good luck with that. I wasn't expecting this conversation to go in that direction, but, maybe there's something there, and that's your way. Because, I mean, I think what I described about Clipstart, I thought it had to be bigger than it really needs to be, and that's what stopped me from actually shipping it and building it. Probably the same thing for Marzedit, right? I mean, you wrote a bunch of code, way more than I've written for Clipstart on iOS. You wrote a bunch of
that's the sad part,
right? But I think probably in your head, you were like, it's got to live up to the Marzedit name. It's got to have all these features for it to be called Marzedit. Maybe that's not true. Maybe it can be a lot simpler than that.
And especially if I call it floppy. Flappy blog. Floppy blog.
Well, you'll come up and everyone's searching the app store for Flappy.
Yeah.
You know, like there's all these apps that have been out for a while that were only kind of a little bit similar to Flappy Bird, and they've renamed, you know.
Oh,
when
man.
Flappy Bird took off, the developers went to iTunes Connect and they renamed their app, you know, Flappy something. And it's sad, but those apps.
It's a sales. Yeah, it's a real window right now into the, you know, economic mentality of the store. That just the crazy stuff that's on there, like flappy fish, flappy bees, flappy. Oh my God, it's a mess. And they've done some. Yeah. I'm impressed with how quickly. I mean, I guess it's if it only took him, the original author, 3 days to make it from scratch, then I guess, you know, it's, you know, I think.
But some of these apps are new, though, right? They've just been renamed. Yeah, like right. Flappy Bee has been around for a while, but it was called, like,
oh my God,
Busy Bee or something different.
We got to get our friend John Trainer, who made, you know, years ago made like a very simple iOS game called Bullfrog, where you're a little frog that, you know, hops around and eats bugs.
Oh my gosh.
Flappy Frog.
Flappy Frog. It's almost too perfect. You know,
I think one of the big success points for Flappy Bird is that it's just so fun to say Flappy.
Yeah, the silly name has something to do with it. One of the apps that took its place in the top 10, it's the same kind of gameplay. It's ridiculously hard. I think it's even harder. It's called Iron Pants. And it's again, silly name, right? And I think that probably plays into the success somehow.
Yeah. Well, this has been another exciting episode of Flappy Intuition.
Oh, geez. All right. Go off and make Flappy Blog. I'm going to go
play. We're going to go play Flappy.
Play some games.
All right, Manson. Folks, if you want to get in touch with us, you can drop us a line by email, feedback@coreint.org. Hit us up on Glassboard. Invite code is just coreint. We're also on Twitter and on app.net as @coreint. Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please spread the word. Leave us some reviews on iTunes if you get the chance. And we'll see you next week.
All right. Talk to you next time.